Welcome back to the BS of the Sun podcast. This is Jim Kochenour. With me again this week is Dave King. And Summer League is over. It's actually been over for a couple of days, and I'm a little dilatory in getting this podcast to you. But we're going to touch on the final games there. The Suns did fall just short of a Summer League championship. And then we're going to go over some of the signings, a couple other things in current Suns news. How are you doing, Dave?
Hey, I'm doing pretty good. I was pretty impressed with how the Suns did win more games than last year. They had what could be considered a loaded squad there this year, but they actually played to their strengths and made it to the championship game. Just unfortunately fell to the Spurs, coming in second to the Spurs once again.
Yeah, you had mentioned that in the recap where the Suns talked about their week in Vegas. That was in there. I guess that was actually Keith maybe that did that. But he still hates the Spurs. Do you still hate the Spurs, Dave?
I have developed a healthy respect for the Spurs, and they do things the right way. They've won by keeping their players loyal. Everybody is loyal to that organization, and they got the right combo of superstars who are aging gracefully and taking less money. On one hand, you have Kobe Bryant, who through some fault, no fault, all fault, whatever you want to say, somehow is making $25 million a year in the worst years of his career, knowing these were going to be awful years of his career. And Tim Duncan is making $5, $10 million a year. So, and Manu Ginobili is making very little. And Tony Parker has always taken pay cuts. All of them are taking less money to keep their team relevant, while the Lakers are mired in nothingness.
I'm just a little bit, it's kind of tired losing to the Spurs, coming in as the bridesmaids to them on such a perpetual basis. So we lost Aldridge to them. We lost the Summer League championship to them. I'm sure if we had like three-legged races or water balloon fights, something else, that we'd lose to them in that too. I don't know whether it's like the older brother, younger brother type of thing. We just can't. So some of the specific performances there at the Summer League, the Spurs did lose that last game, but they had some good performances throughout the Summer League, I thought, from a couple of the guys that are supposed to play bigger roles for the team this year, hopefully. What were your biggest takeaways, Dave, from, let's go with the Suns that are actually maybe counted on to produce a little bit this coming season?
Sure. Well, for one thing, I think PJ Warren is exactly who we think he is. He hasn't really, in the last 2 months, hasn't really developed anything that we didn't see last year or in college or anywhere else. The guy can score. He's going to be creative enough to get a shot off against anybody. It doesn't matter what NBA player is out there. He's going to be able to score against any kind of defense in the inside, 15-foot range. That's good. He's going to be quick scoring off the bench. And he won't make really stupid plays. So there's that. The problem is he doesn't rebound enough to be a small ball four. Doesn't defend quick enough to be a big small forward or shooting guard, and he doesn't have enough range to shoot outside shots. So the Suns are going to have to surround him with outside shooters. You put him in a lineup with Devin Booker, who I'll talk about in a second, and Mirza Teletovic, who we'll talk about later. If those guys are lined up on the three-point line, ready to launch threes when the ball is kicked out to them, TJ Warren's going to have a ton of room to drive. You know, what the Suns lost when they traded Goran Dragic was having a second driver to the hoop, a second guy who can get to the hoop under any circumstances next to Eric Bledsoe. Well, TJ Warren could fill that role if you put, two shooters around him, if you put a long-range shooters around him. But I'm not sure TJ Warren and Markieff Morris would be a great combo in a game because they both want to work in the mid-range, whereas Morris is always turnaround, fall away kind of shots. Warren is going toward the hoop. They're still shooting from about the same distance on different sides of the floor. So that would really clog the lane. From Warren, we saw exactly what we thought we were going to see. And he made first team all NBA Summer League. So he's obviously very effective, and he's shown that. With Devin Booker, I really think that kid's got a great future. I'm trying to figure out why I'm so high on him and why everybody else is and why we should not be, because he's only 18 and we were high on Archie 2 years ago and we were high on Warren last year. and neither really made a dent in the rotation. And we should not expect Warren to make a dent in the rotation either, because he's only giving 19, barely turned 19 on opening night. So we should not expect anything from Devin Booker yet. The coach is already talking about giving him earning a rotation spot, knowing where he can play him, because Booker plays to his strengths. One of the things he said in his pre-draft workout, in the interview after his pre-draft workout, was he likes to make the simple play. He likes to make the game simpler than it looks. And that's how he, as a 18-year-old, played and won sixth man of the year in the conference for Kentucky, coming off the bench, but finding a way to really contribute in his first year in Kentucky with one of the best teams in college basketball history. So he might be able to earn a rotation spot this year. We should not hold our breath for it, but we should be pleasantly surprised and happy if and when he does.
I think with TJ, what is concerning to me, and you had kind of touched on it a little bit, is that the one thing that he is very good at, which is scoring, and most of that is done around the basket, I don't know if it offsets some of his other weaknesses, because I don't see the rebounding. I don't think I see the NBA-level defense that around the perimeter. I don't see the long-range shooting. So like you had said, it's almost a situation where you're needing to kind of hide some of Warren's deficiencies. And I don't know at this stage in his career whether it's necessarily a good idea to try to construct a lineup around trying to hide a 21-year-old second-year players to mask those deficiencies. Are you seeing those same kind of weaknesses, the rebounding, the defense, and the outside shooting, maybe compromising Warren's ability to be productive this season?
Yeah, I certainly can. I do think that can happen. However, I'll point out that almost every NBA player has some huge deficiencies their coach has to try to hide. I mean, if you compare TJ Warren to Gerald Green, for example, Warren's got a really high basketball IQ, and he does. He just doesn't have the quickness of foot to be able to stay with the really fast guys out there, and that's what you're going to get on the wing. So, but you can hide him if you play the right defense and you have him shading to one side or the other on the offensive player and funneling that player to the back toward, you know, the lane where Tyson Chandler or Alex Len's going to be defending the basket, then yeah, maybe he can be effective at all. It's all about the defensive scheme. I mean, I remember being very surprised that Ray Allen was passable for the Celtics in his later years as they were going to conference finals and championships, because Ray Allen was just a turnstile on defense over in Seattle. And so, but they hid him because Kevin Garnett was so good defensively under the basket. And Mike Longobardi was on the Celtics during those years. So it depends on your scheme, and it depends on how the players are playing the scheme. Last couple of years, Longobardi's had a scheme where, if you actually look back on it, with the level of defensive talent they've had on the team, for the Suns to finish mid-pack both years in defense was actually not bad. But imagine if they've got a defensive captain in Tyson Chandler putting people in all the right spots, and then teaching Alex Len how to put people in all the right spots, and Brandon Knight out on the perimeter getting people in the right spots. It's possible you can hide a TJ Warren. So we'll just have to see how it goes. Certainly Warren can do things that very few other NBA players can do, which is to create a shot from nothing in the lane, in a clogged lane. So definitely he's got some upside. I'd like to see if the Suns can hide those deficiencies.
Three-point shooting is definitely going to be something we'll be keeping an eye on for the team as a whole. It doesn't really look like it promises to be a strength for certain. Hopefully it's not a weakness that kind of undermines what the offense is trying to do. Now, Booker, after a little bit of a slow start, he really came on strong and showed his shooting stroke off. And so, like you had mentioned, maybe there even is a possibility of him playing a little bit this season. But I don't know if more of that's necessarily going to be because Devin Booker is that good, or be more of a case where Weems and Archie Goodwin aren't earning the playing time ahead of them, because especially I think with Weems, hopefully we're expecting that this guy is going to be able to contribute play right away. What do you think, David? From what you saw of Archie Goodwin, does it look like he's already losing this battle for playing time to the younger Devin Booker?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I was having a conversation with somebody at work about this today. What Archie Goodwin actually, and I didn't get to him on my recap yet on Summer League, because you've got Archie Goodwin and Alex Len who also played, and they're about to enter their third NBA year. And neither of them was the star of the team. However, both of them were very steady, and they did the kind of things that the coaches have wanted them to do. So Archie Goodwin showed that he can confidently take an outside shot and make it. He made 46% of his shots this year, with a lot of them being jumpers. So I think and he scored 15 points a game. So I think he did what he needed to do in summer league without being spectacular in doing it. So the shine has worn off in his ability to drive to the rim. And for some reason, in the last two games in that summer league tournament, he didn't drive much. He only had two free throws total in the last two games. So I'm not really sure what happened there, other than maybe he wasn't the star of either of those games. You had Mike James being the star of the championship and Devin Booker being the star the night before. So maybe Goodwin was just letting the game come to him, which is also very important for Archie Goodwin, letting the game come to him. But he's going to make or break his rotation spot based on his ability to take and make a three-pointer without hesitating. One of the biggest problems with creating space is not taking the three-pointer that's open to you right away. Because if you hesitate on taking that open three when your defender is sagged off based on some penetration by another player, then they have no reason not to sag off you because they have plenty of time to recover. That was the biggest problem with Marcus and Markieff last year. And even with P.J. Tucker when he wasn't in the far corner and catching and shooting, and even his release isn't that fast. I'm really looking forward to seeing a Booker and a Toledovich taking those split-second shots where they catch and shoot and boom, it's gone. That's going to pull the defense out of the paint. Archie has to be able to develop that. He's straightened out his shot. He has less of a hitch in it. It looks straighter going out of his hand and toward the rim. But he's got to be able to take that with confidence. And if he can do that, then maybe he can beat out Weems. We haven't seen Weems play much, so I don't know why we're already writing him off as being unable to earn a rotation spot. And I'd like to see him first before I decide whether he's worthy of a rotation spot or not.
I think it might actually come down with a lot of these people to who can shoot the three. I think with the Suns, you have Bledsoe, who's not a terribly strong three-point shooter. Ronnie Price can't shoot the three. Weems, I think I saw somebody speaking to this, actually writing about this in the comments on the site, that based off of his three-point attempts that were actually at NBA range, the percentage still wasn't that great when he was playing internationally. Now, I mean, why would you be taking a lot of threes that are longer than you need to? But he's going to have to adjust to shooting the NBA three again. You have Warren's not a strong three-point shooter. Goodwin's not. So, you know, hopefully Mirza can bring some good three-point shooting. He's had one season where he was a plus three-point shooter in the NBA because Markieff, once again, isn't a strong three-point shooter. Brandon Knight has been a plus three-point shooter in the past. PJ can hit the corner three, but there aren't a whole lot of terribly good shooters, so I think some of it might come down to that, definitely. Go ahead, Dave.
Well, certainly last year when the Suns had their best stretch of the season, even with the three-point guard lineup that really had everyone gnashing their teeth over how unsustainable that was, when they were playing really well with that three-point guard lineup is when the team was shooting 40% of their threes, making 40% of their threes. And it was just obvious. And then they held on for a little while after that and kept it going to a 28-20 record when they started falling off from three-point land before the trade deadline, before Goran and Isaiah were traded. They had a real bad month shooting the three in January, February. And then, of course, it all went off the rails after the trade. So, yeah, you're right. It is about three-point shooting. But I'll also say it can't get much worse than last year. If the Suns can shoot 36% on threes, and they've got a couple of guys out there most of the time taking threes without hesitation, they're going to be a lot better team on offense.
Another thing that will be interesting to see this year is how that interacts with Tyson Chandler in the middle. I know that Brian Giberman had put some stuff up about how his play might actually affect the team's ability to shoot the three based off of him kind of drawing the defense and things like that. In the summer league, obviously, we saw his backup, Alex Len, out there performing. What did you think about Alex in the summer league, Dave?
Well, you know, I listened to this afternoon when I was busy at work. I listened to actually a podcast that David Thorpe, who's an ESPN analyst and also has been a coach for 20 or 30 years, was talking about summer league. And he looks at it from a coaching perspective, not from a scouting perspective. And he said summer league is pretty much a throwaway. You really can't put a lot of stock into people that win summer league or MVPs of summer league, just like you cannot put a lot of stock in guys who fail miserably in summer league. Because summer league is generally about the fringe players doing the best they possibly can to prove they're on a team, whereas NBA veteran types, the guys under guaranteed contracts, are working on something. So last year, Archie Goodwin was really disappointing to all of us because he was working on trying to be a point guard, and that didn't work real well. But that he spent every game trying to do that, and because the coaches wanted him to. And this year, I'm not exactly sure what they were doing with Alex Len on offense, but he didn't look comfortable doing anything. So I'm pretty sure what they decided he was going to do is get a lot of passes into the post with his back to the basket and try to score on whoever was behind him. And he wasn't very good at it. That doesn't mean he's never going to be good at it. It just means he wasn't very good at it this summer, and that impacted him offensively. They didn't really give him the ball anywhere else to take shots. So it was pretty much score from the post or don't score, unless you're getting lobs at the basket, which he had a couple of. Defensively and rebounding-wise, which I continue to say are two completely different things, and truly they are, he did really well in both of those areas. When he was on the floor, the Suns were really hard to stop. He had some foul moments where he was committing fouls when he didn't need to, but also the refs are pretty bad in summer league. There was a few fouls where in an NBA game those probably wouldn't have been called, and those refs aren't that great. So summer league is also a learning opportunity for the refs. But anyway, he was a major deterrent in the paint in summer league, very successful there, and you know, I was pretty impressed with that.
Yeah, we disagree on that because. Definitely. I see rebounding, especially defensive rebounding, as the way a defensive possession ends. And so I see that as part of defense, just like back in the heyday in the 90s with Cedric Ceballos, how he would gobble up offensive rebounds and put them right back. And that was definitely a big part of his offensive game, and that's been a part of other people's offensive game, so getting those offensive rebounds and converting.
Right, Jim, but he wasn't a reason the Suns played good defense. And if you look at Kevin Love, and Al Jefferson, those guys are not reasons that their teams play good defense. In fact, those guys are deterrents to that, and you have to scheme around them. And so, no, rebounding and defense, to me, are completely different. While rebounding does end the possession, you've got to get to the point where you're rebounding a missed shot first. And what Kevin Love generally would do is allow you to just take the shot and score 60% plus around the rim. But on the ones you miss, by God, he was going to be there for the rebound. That sounds like sniper work to me, better than defensive work.
Which is definitely a conversation that maybe for another time. It's definitely open for a little bit of debate. But Alex Len, tell me if I'm crazy here, Dave, because he definitely projects as more of the indomitable defensive presence than the Suns have had at a pivot. In recent years, if ever, maybe. The Suns just don't have that history of strong defensive centers. And with Tyson Chandler in front of him, I think this has a chance to give the Suns a couple of goalies back there to kind of help the defense. And do the two of them, I know there's a couple other good units. Obviously, the Spurs, you know, if you're going to count Aldridge with Duncan, that's a really good team with at the five. You have teams like Memphis with Marc Gasol, and now they have Brandon Wright behind him at the five. Anthony Davis, if he counts as a five, him and any other player in the league is really good. A couple of these other teams. Do the Suns actually have a chance to be strong at center, like have one of the maybe top five units in the league?
Yeah, see, this is where I'm having a tough time because, as you know, as you just said, the Suns have not had a good history of of dominating at the center position. And things like, will anyone play at an all-star level? That's kind of out the window now because they've changed the way, and you didn't mention this, but I keep thinking of it, is that they've changed the voting for all-star games now. It's just two bigs and three guards, basically making sure one of those three is a point guard. And so there's so many talented power forward types that are going to be named to the all-star game that we cannot expect any tier center to make an all-star game in the near future. It can happen, but I don't expect it. You know, Anthony Davis is going to make an all-star game over, even if a Tyson Chandler for some reason is doing 12 and 12 and two blocks and is playing defensive player of the year caliber, which that would be on the high side. But what if he's doing that, we can't even expect that to be an all-star year. So we still have not acquired, the Suns have still not acquired an all-star, a perennial all-star. However, as you say, winning games isn't about making an all-star game or not. And Tyson Chandler can really help the Suns win games. And even as much as, I mean, the guy fills every need the Suns had. High-level rebounder, check. Shot deterrent, check. Shot blocker, check. Finisher on the pick and roll lobs, so he doesn't catch the ball down at his waist on bounce passes like Steve Nash used to do into the pick and roll, but he can catch and finish lobs better than even Brandon Wright could. So definitely, if the Suns point guards can figure that out, he'll be very effective offensively. But what more than all that, he's going to captain the defense. He's going to yell at people and tell them to get in the right position. And what Hornacek has talked about for the last last 2 years, is that nobody talks on their defense, and which still amazes me that they finished middle of the pack in both years. I think that says a lot for Longobardi, that they could do that without having any talking on the defensive end of the floor, and now Tyson Chandler is going to change that. And that has really got me excited about his influence on this team.
I agree with a lot of that. That does portend very well. And then I like the dynamic with the two of them healthy. When he subs out, then you put Alex Len in there and you have another lane presence there. You're not going to a Brandon Wright like we had last year, who's a very good player, but he doesn't change shots and affect the game and intimidate and deter the lane penetration the way a guy like Alex Len does. So that could turn out really well, especially if Alex can take another little bit of a step forward and Chandler's still playing at a very high level. Yeah, that could actually make that one of the strongest positions on the team, which is going to be very different than Suns fans are accustomed to. But one of the places that might actually turn into an Achilles heel on the team, one of the weak spots, is at the four. And you had put up a story this past week that the Suns basically hadn't really had much of a dialogue with Markieff Morris since they had traded his brother to the Pistons. What exactly now, what were the conversations that you had with the Suns about this?
I had a one-on-one with Ryan McDonough. I would have had one with Jeff Hornacek, but I really had to run back to work. So I was just on my lunch break, but I did get a one-on-one with Ryan, and I transcribed that for the article on the site. And he didn't seem fazed at all. And you also could see the video on the site too. He didn't seem fazed at all by the fact he hasn't talked to Markieff. You could chalk that up. He doesn't need to talk to Markieff. They don't even have to be at training camp until September. And he had a lot of other work to do, and it's not that big of a deal. Or you could chalk it up to, gosh, he really doesn't quite understand human interaction and stroking egos of these young players. I mean, I have to deal with millennials a lot in my real life job. And millennials do expect to be treated a little bit differently than people from my generation. Now, what's interesting is McDonough is kind of on the cusp between my generation and these young guys, because he's only in his mid-30s himself. But he seems to be somebody who doesn't need constant glad-handing and back-slapping and hugs to get his job done. Whereas a lot of these younger guys really do need to have him expected, because they've gotten it their whole lives. You know, you get these participation trophies just for showing up and playing. You play AAU basketball and everybody just is loved and gets everything given to them that they want. You get a scholarship at Kansas and everybody's handing you everything and loving you. And then you immediately go into the NBA and you're a millionaire. So I don't think McDonough really respects the guy's need or the generation's need to be handheld all the way along. And that's kind of, I think, why he lost Gorin and why he never really connected fully with Isaiah Thomas and getting that role right. And now Markieff, he's not talking to Markieff. Is that a bad thing? I don't know if it's a bad thing. That's not his job. His job isn't to hold everyone's hand. His job is to put together the best basketball team he can. So he's doing his job very well, but he is running the risk of hurting another relationship by not talking.
I think with Markieff Morris in particular is what makes it a little bit more of a delicate situation, because we all know of the track record of judgment decision-making with him. And obviously people can change, but some people don't change. And Markieff, it's become a pattern with him. So even I was on hearing on the radio, Mark Cuban had mentioned, and I thought this was funny, and it relates back to what you said about the millennials, that he wishes he would have had DeAndre Jordan change his Twitter avatar when they had gotten the deal hammered out. So that could have happened before the Clippers got back into his ear. And people are like this. I think, you know, if Mark tweeted out his thing about, LOL, this is a foul game, I think something like that, then Ryan McDonough should have tweeted to him, you know, Keith, we still love you, something like that, you know, hashtag, you know, FOE or something like that. And then it would have all been good water under the bridge. I don't know. I don't know whether it's a story or not. I think other people maybe have at least passingly kind of talked. And obviously with them trading Markieff, I think last summer, I think I'm correct about that, the two of them spent a lot of time here. But now, obviously, with Marcus gone, it doesn't make sense for Markieff to be here by himself, and the two of them are kind of hanging out together. Does that sound about right?
Absolutely. They were the last three off seasons. Well, two, because they were drafted. They were both drafted right into the lockout, so there wasn't much off season that first year when they were rookies. But the last two off seasons, yes, Marcus and Markieff have spent the entire time at U.S. Airways. And, I'm getting it wrong. They've been in the league 4 years. So, yes, for the last three off seasons, they've been at U.S. Airways all the time. Even before Marcus was on the team, they spent most of the summer at U.S. Airways working out together, with Marcus playing for the Rockets still, but it was summer, so they didn't have to be anywhere in particular. These guys have lived there, and now they haven't been around. Now, of course, playing into that is their legal troubles. It's not like Markieff and Marcus Morris are angels and they're sitting around and they're getting fat and all that, and the Suns are locking them out of the building. These guys have other things to think about, and one of those is potentially going to jail. So and it is quite possible the Suns and them have decided that they're going to keep a very, very low profile until all these legal troubles have been worked out, whether Marcus was traded or not. So, yeah, that is a little bit different, and I wonder how it's going to impact Markieff coming into next season.
So at some point before training camp, hopefully the Suns can extricate Markieff from the safe house that he's in right now, trying to keep himself out of trouble. I just think the story would have been a lot nicer. It would have been a little bit more warm and fuzzy if the story would have been Ryan McDonough says, yeah, I've spoken to Markieff, and he understands that, you know, it's the business side of basketball. It's unfortunate, but these things kind of happen, and we're ready to move on. Now, that would have been a great story to put on, because then we could have all set our minds at rest at least a little bit about that. But instead of the tweet and then the little Markieff moratorium, we haven't really heard much from him since then. So the Suns do have a backup lined up for him, it looks like, though. They got Mirza Fadovic on board, and hopefully he can be a little bit more of that stretch four that the Suns were missing last season. Now, you had written another story, Dave, that talked about Teletovic and kind of the decision-making, the thought process, the backstory behind him coming to the Suns. Do you want to go into depth a little bit on that?
Yeah, I thought that was really interesting. That was the other thing I was able to cover with McDonough before I had to take off, and that was how they got Mirza to sign. And basically, they were working on getting Mirza a contract from the very beginning of in July, and Tyson Chandler's agent is also Mirza Teletovic's agent. So, and I think that's a very, very good pairing. You know, the kind of guys who could play really well together are Chandler and Toledovich. So I think that was being pushed all along, and the Suns and the Nets and Toledovich really worked it out to where he could come here for a year. And at first I was surprised it was only a one-year contract, but then I realized it's perfect for Toledovich because it's turning out to be a lot weaker 2016 free agent market than anyone might have thought. And so he'll be, if he can have a good year as a stretch four, which everybody in the NBA wants a stretch four these days, he could really cash in next summer. And it's good for the Suns because then they get the flexibility to maybe get one of the best free agents on the market again next summer. They can go after those guys because they've got the free cap space. So good for both sides, and I think it's I personally think it's going to work out really, really well as long as this kid's healthy. He's still a kid to me because of how old I am. He's 29 years old. I think it could be a really good year.
Rising tide floats all boats. So I think with Mirza, if he does have a good year, if he is shooting over 40% from three, if he's giving the Suns about 10 points a game, then that's more likely to be in line with the Suns team that at least sneaks into the back door of the playoffs. I don't know that you really see Mirza play a successful role and do it really well and earn that contract where the Suns are just a terrible team. I think that they're going to be at least passable if that's the type of situation there. But I think that the bench in general, it is really a big question mark to me. It lacks a lot of experience. And I've been doing a little bit of looking into that in terms of how they kind of compare to other teams across the league in terms of years of experience, games played, minutes played. And I'm going to have a story up about that soon, beginning of next week, I think. And the Suns really do rate a little bit down the pole there in terms of stuff like that. What's interesting is that Marcus Morris, who got shipped off to the Pistons, behind the grizzled veteran Ronnie Price, which we're all expecting great things out of, he would actually by far have the most experience in terms of games played, minutes played in the NBA, and actually would be the only player on the bench that's actually averaged over 10 points a game for an NBA season. So I think that there's a lot to be proven by this bench unit. I think you have a little bit of a more optimistic view in terms of the ceiling of a lot of those players, though, don't you, Dave?
Yeah, I kind of do. I mean, if you're talking about a bench that can survive, so first of all, the starting lineup's going to be stronger than it's been in years. You know, if you've got Tyson Chandler, Marquise Morris, and P.J. Tucker, and the two guards, Eric Bledsoe and Brandon Knight, you've got every single player having played, being in his fourth-plus season in the NBA. So I think that's a real strong veteran starting lineup, even though Marquise and Brandon Knight and Eric Bledsoe are only 26 or younger. With Brandon Knight still being only 23. So that's a really good starting lineup. So you just need some occasional value off the bench, and you don't have to play all five bench guys. I know we've all for years wanted a five-man bench unit, but you don't need that. You need two or three or four guys coming off the bench and playing at a high level, and I think Toledovich is going to do that. And you just have to find one or two of these other guys who can do that as well. So I really do think the Suns have created an opportunity for the young guys to have rotation positions. And, you know, so if we were really deep with five, six guys or five, 6 year players as backups, then everybody would be crying over when's TJ Warren going to get a chance? And when is Archie Goodwin going to get a chance? And when is Devin Booker going to, well, they're going to get a chance this year and they're going to have to prove it. And if they can't, then, you know, the Suns are going to have to go out and look for something else.
Absolutely. And like we talked about a little bit before with being a little peculiar, a little odd for the Suns, Alex Len actually, I think, comes into the season and from my perspective as the most proven bench commodity. He was the only player on that bench that really played, you know, he actually started half the season for the Suns last year, but played a lot last year and did so successfully. A lot of these guys, Lure Toledovich, obviously, because of his health condition, Warren, Goodwin, Booker, Weems, all these guys didn't really play much in the league, much or at all. So I think that there is a lot to be proven there. So hopefully it'll kind of work out. I think that there are some good things that I like about this team with the depth at the center spot, the defensive potential of the team. I think this team has a chance to be really good defensively. But then there are some weaknesses in terms of some question marks. Will the three-point shooting hold up? And can this bench be good enough to complement, like what you had said, which should be a pretty good starting five? On paper, it seems like a pretty strong starting five, but I definitely have those question marks. Does that at least kind of sound like where some of the stuff on the season might hinge to you, Dave?
Yeah, absolutely. So Alex Len and Teletovic coming off the bench, you can expect consistency there as long as you've got the health. And then we're just really looking for the wing guys to show consistency as well. And that, in fact, might be a reason that they signed Ronnie Price, because he was not good. He's not really good as an NBA player, but he, at least you know what you're going to get every single night when he comes onto the court. So at least that's predictable, and coaches really like predictability from their players.
It's interesting. Ryan McDonough definitely said that he needed to kind of learn his lesson because he didn't have enough veteran leadership on the team from the previous season. And Tyson Chandler definitely checks those boxes. Ronnie Price also is a veteran leader. The Suns definitely got older with some of these other signings, with Mirza and with Sonny Weems, some of these guys, but they didn't necessarily get all the NBA experience with it. So I think that there's definitely going to be a better locker room. I don't see the potential for a bunch of the calamity that we experienced last season, except for maybe the Markieff Morris situation. Do you think it's going to be a much more stable clubhouse, Dave?
Oh, absolutely. I really do think it's going to be a lot more stable clubhouse. You're certainly not going to have the negativity rampant amongst guys who just don't have much experience in the world. You know, like you said, there may not be quite as much basketball experience, but there's certainly a lot of life experience here. And I think we're going to have a lot more calm locker room.
Okay, sounds good. Well, I don't keep you here for too long. I know that you just had a brief amount of time, and I want to thank you for coming on and sharing with us. Appreciate it. I am going to get that story I mentioned out next week, and I'll have all those numbers up in terms of some of the bench experience stuff, and I'll just try to lay those numbers out there and let them simmer, and I'm sure I can get people that will come back and talk to me about how I twisted and contorted everything and convoluted the situation to make it as pessimistic, brooding, lugubrious, tenebrous as possible. So I'm
so
sure I'll have to contend with
yourself.
That. But I'll do my very best, though, to be completely impartial. I'll be France on this one, but I'm sure it won't end up that way. Do you have anything else to share real quick before we sign off, Dave?
Yeah, I just wanted to do a big, big shout out for Keith Schiesel, as well as Kellen Olson, for being on site for us in Vegas. It was fun for them, but it's also really, really fun for us to get all those dispatches from watching those guys live. And I'm looking forward to you having a podcast next week, hopefully, with Keith, so he can share his insights, because he's the one who actually had the media pass and was able to talk to the players and coaches after the games and, get that really up-close, first-hand knowledge.
That would be nice if I can track him down. He's like podcast royalty, but eventually I am going to hunt him down. And you too, for coming on here. You're a pretty big timer. It seems like I can't listen to Arizona Sports Radio recently without them throwing out a Dave King shout out and talking about what a good job we do on the site here. So Dave King, you are also becoming a basketball celebrity in terms of all this stuff here locally, at least. So, thanks for coming on. I want to thank everybody for listening. We'll be back again a little bit later this week with another podcast. This is Jim Kochenour, along with Dave King, and this was the BS of the Sun podcast.